Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers have the 17th pick in the upcoming NBA draft. Who would be a good fit for them? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcasts, it's always going to be free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube, that's where you can go to watch the show, hang out with over 17,000 Lakers fans, NBA fans, all itching to find out who the Lakers might take in this NBA draft coming up on the 22nd. Today's episode is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Go to birddogs.com/lockedonNBA, and when you enter the promo code LockedOnNBA, they'll throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti-style tumbler. It's the best kind of style of tumbler with every order. Andy, you and I often like to make the joke that there aren't really two people who follow basketball and the NBA who, for as long as we have and as closely as we have, that are as unplugged into the college game, into the draft game than us. If somebody wanted to troll us by inventing fake players and asking us about them, we would not know who is who. So with that in mind, we hope that our guest today, Rafael Barlow, he is the host of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast and the NBA Big Board newsletter, doesn't take advantage of us like that and make us look stupid on our own show. Rafael, thanks so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. I'm glad to be on, and I've been receiving messages all day about me being a guest on this podcast. So you guys have listeners all over the country, and a little bit of pressure on me now because I got to deliver. Because
they'll come after you. Yeah, be good.
Yeah.
So I want to start here. Like the Lakers have the 17th pick. They are reportedly going to, at least for the time being, going to keep it. You know, there's not been a ton of chatter that the Lakers would look to package this thing. Obviously, a lot can change in the 2 weeks or so before the draft actually arrives. But broadly speaking, when you look at this draft, especially in the context of 17 and 47 in the second round, what kind of depth are we talking about? Because, like, you know, Wemby, Scoot Henderson, those guys don't matter to the Lakers. But in terms of the depth, the quality of player that you could get in the middle of the first round and then middle of the second round, what's available? What does it look like?
I think it's a good class as far as finding guys that can be complementary players to stars that you already have. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's a strong class. And I mean, I think it's top heavy, but I think from maybe 5 through the lottery, I think that's fluid. That can be interchangeable, give or take a few guys that may, you know, be locks to go in the top 6 or 7 or whatever. And then I would say from maybe 15 through 25 or 15 through 30, I mean, I think that's pretty fluid. I mean, there's some guys that if they go number 15, I wouldn't be surprised. If that same guy goes to 30, it wouldn't shock me either. So I think that it's a good class. But it's also a class where you're going to be able to find complementary role players in the middle of the first round and even late first round, probably even second round also.
When you talk about it being a strong class, do you tend to look at it more through the lens of ceiling or floor when you're trying to figure out the potential of these players?
I mean, obviously ceiling. I mean, that's what everybody.
Well, I mean, to me, it's not necessarily obvious just because, mm-hmm. you know, the safety of a high floor can have a pretty good value for a team as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Depending on how realistic you think another player's ceiling is.
Yeah. I mean, I think most teams swing for upside anyway. And so I think some of the safer guys end up falling later on in the first round. And those are usually the guys that, you know, end up projecting to have good careers. But a lot of times teams are swinging for like this raw athletic guy that has this upside and you're hoping that he's able to put it together. And like I said, the safer guys usually kind of fall.
Could that advantage a team like the Lakers, like you said, you know, obviously built around LeBron, built around Anthony Davis, where you are looking for a complementary player to come in and help? Like, that type of guy who might be a little bit safer, maybe lacks the ceiling, but has that higher floor.
Yeah, I mean, if I were like in charge of the Lakers or whatever, and I understand like the value of upside, but I think there's a small window for like to put a championship contender. And I mean, even though LeBron might be able to play to at least like 45, I mean, he Father Time is slowly chipping away at him, but I mean, it's as slow as we've ever seen. But I would look for a guy that can come in and help like right now if I'm the Lakers. And I think they should be able to find some guys in this class that can, you know, not necessarily be like a starter, but maybe someone that can crack their top eight rotation, that can come in and maybe provide 10 to 15 minutes per game.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the specifics, Rafael, during the show about guys that could be in the Lakers pick range and how you think they might be able to fit with, I agree with you, that timeline of they're going to be drafting somebody that can help now. They're like, mm-hmm. they're not looking for projects. Right. Do you think, though, that there's a chance that the Lakers could be able to package that, might be able to get something for the 17th pick from a team looking to move up a little bit? Like they could end up taking, say, the 25th pick and getting a player in return for that 17. Like, do you think the difference between low teens versus high to mid 20s could be big enough or tangible enough in this draft that a team might be looking to move for it?
Yeah, I think there's a few teams that would be looking to move up, and then there's teams like Indiana that has 3 first-round picks, Utah has 3 first-round picks, and maybe, you know, they're looking to consolidate. They may not be looking to bring 3 rookies into camp. So I think that there could be something there. I think a team like Houston, I know Houston's probably not looking to bring in another young guy or whatever. So they may be, you know, it may be a situation where they could possibly be a trade partner. I'm not saying like they have like the greatest pieces that could help, but maybe a guy like Jayshon Tate could be available in some type of trade. So, but I do think that, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, it's an interesting question just because like the Lakers, and we'll talk about this just because, you know, the Lakers do have good track record at finding those guys. I think that's sort of what you're getting at, Andy. Like if they can pick up an extra second round or, you know, the 25th pick and the 35th pick, like is the gap between 17 and say early 20s in terms of the quality of player, do you think that'd be like really tangible that they could, you know, that they could go get?
Yeah, I think they, I mean, like you said, they have a good track record. I think if there's a guy that they like and they feel like he's available at 20, which is a possible, or 25, I think that it does make sense to get that guy and pick up an asset along the way.
Okay, so in the next segment, we want to get into, I know Andy's got a bunch of names of guys that he wants to ask about specifically, but when you look at the 17th pick, and I've been, you know, spending the week looking at mock drafts and this and that. Again, no idea who most of these people are, but trying to see where, you know, where they aggregate out to, what kinds of players are available and who they're talking about. And then, you know, we know what the Lakers could use and then whether or not a player like that would make sense. When you think about, you know, 4 or 5 guys who could be available at 17, we'll get into the descriptions after the break, but who are some of the names that you think are live for the Lakers there?
Yeah, I mean, I think about wings that could be available that can shoot. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, that would be like the most important position. And there are a lot of wings in this draft. I mean, Jet Howard from Michigan could be available.
That is who we took in the Locked On mock draft.
I remember.
We learned about like 30 seconds after we found out that the guy that we were going to take, Derek Lively, who we thought both filled a role as a center and mm-hmm. also was a clutch guy, which, you know, gave him a nice little leg up. We had to learn about Jet Howard, but we figured that, you know, he comes from, you know, good pedigree with his dad being Juwan, and Juwan Howard and Rob Pelinka were teammates at Michigan.
Yeah,
and we had 30 seconds to figure
right. The first thing we did was, and we were really confident that Jet Howard was a real person, which is again our main criteria in things like this to make sure that we're not doing something really stupid. Good pick, bad pick, that can be debated. That is not a real person, guys. Is really embarrassing on that show.
Yeah, so Jet Howard, who else are you pegging?
Yeah, Bryce Sensenbaugh from Ohio State. may not be able to help on the defensive end, and I could say the same about Jet Howard, but he's a guy that shot over 40% from three. If Jordan Hawkins is available, and I think he has a range, and it's talking about Jordan Hawkins from UConn, he's coming off a national championship, I think he has a range anywhere from 12 to 20, and I can make a case and say he's arguably the best shooter in this class, especially when you consider that the degree of difficulty on his shots. He's a very good movement shooter. And, I mean, there's some guys that, you know, on paper their numbers look better, but they may have been just spot-up shooters. Jordan Hawkins has – he has that rare ability to be able to shoot on the move. So think of, like, Rip Hamilton with more range. I know it's kind of a lazy comparison because they both went to UConn, but he's that type of active – guy that can fight off screens and basically catch fire and let it go in one I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, but basically like
motion.
He's a guy that can let it fire. Yep. Shoot it, let it fire. And he's accurate. So I think he could help. I'm trying to think. I mean, as far as like a big, and you talk about a clutch guy, Noah Clowney is someone that I think could be in that range. He's a big 6'10". Kind of came out of nowhere in a sense, wasn't like a five-star recruit, wasn't someone that we thought was going to be a one and done, played a role in a good Alabama team, shows flashes of upside as a shooter, and he's represented by Clutch. So
All right. So I know Andy's got a few other names. I'm not sure how many of those, Andy, that Raphael just mentioned are on your list.
I believe just about all of them. So it's nice to know, if nothing else, I can read mock drafts well.
Yes. So we'll get a little more details on some of the guys that you're curious about. We'll do that. And we'll get a little bit of insight from Raphael as to why he thinks the Lakers are so successful, particularly later in the draft, and the kinds of players that could be available for those second round pick that they currently have, whether or not it'd be worth them buying their way to pick up a second rounder, what kind of quality player might be available there. We'll do all of that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Bird Dogs, the makers of shorts and pants that feature the future of comfort, which is built-in underwear. It's stitched inside the pants or shorts, almost like a layer of boxer brief that are at one with the clothing. They call it Comfort Kingdom, and you can rule this land in your Bird Dogs. You can look better, feel better wearing the Bird Dogs. The stretchy fabrics make my legs, your legs, every leg in this world look great. They're comfier than other pants or shorts, and there's versatility. You can wear these shorts or pants on a golf course, work meeting, on a date, all in the same day. Great for grilling and sitting down watching some sports. They're also forgiving. They got a little bit of extra stretch in your midsection. If you need a little more room, nothing to be ashamed of, especially when you're going to look good in these Bird Dogs. If you go to birddogs.com/lockedonNBA, enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. They will throw in a free custom Bird Dogs Yeti-style tumbler with every order. They are awesome. I use mine all the time. Get one of your own and get some Bird Dogs.
All right, Andy, who do you got?
Some of the other guys, like I mentioned, Derek Lively, center from Duke, who seemed like a good fit for the Lakers in the sense that he's, at least from what I've read about him, Raphael, very good at running the floor. And yep. The Lakers like to play with that type of pace. There's some belief that he could develop a good outside shot, or at least, you know, good enough that he requires some guarding. You can have him out there taking that shot comfortably. He can be a disruptive shot blocker, a presence in the lane. And as I mentioned before, he's a clutch guy, which, all jokes aside, would probably make him on the Lakers' radar. But that a lot of people seem high on him. I've seen him on several mock drafts out of the Lakers' range at 17.
Yeah, he seems to be a guy who's kind of moving up a little bit. Would he be available at 17, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I would take him in the top 10, and I think I'm probably in the minority there. But we're talking about a guy that's – I mean, he has the size. He's an excellent shot blocker. What I like most about Lively is he played excellent defense all year despite – never getting the ball. You know, like the old saying, if you reward your big with touches, he'll play hard, he'll rebound. And Lively did that. I mean, Duke's turnaround in the second half of the season, I think, was strongly directly related to Lively's impact on the defensive end. He had a game against North Carolina, I believe, where he had either six or eight blocks or something like that, like totally dominated the game without scoring. And if he's on a team like the Lakers, where he's going to get rewarded with lobs, and he knows that if he runs the floor, somebody's going to find him, I think he could even add more on the defensive end. And so I don't think he'll be available, but I do think that he would be someone that could come in and really make an impact immediately, just because you're not going to give him the ball in the post and, you know, expect to like him to dominate that way. But I think he can change a game with just his energy, his size, his shot blocking. And I mean, who doesn't want like another vertical lob threat and a guy that has the gravity as a rim roller to create open looks for your shooters?
Well, hopefully 16 other teams don't want him, because of the, based on that description, I think the Lakers do.
that is why I targeted him before I ended up off the board. Another guy that I've seen come up, I was a little bit surprised by this because it's at a position that could theoretically be pretty filled, but Nick Smith Jr., a guard from Arkansas, the write-up I saw of him made it seem like the scoring potential is there, but what could really actually keep him on the floor with the Lakers as a rookie is that he might be able to play good enough defense to stay in a rotation. Is that what you're seeing so far?
I don't know about that. I mean, he's a clutch guy also. So
it seems like everybody's a clutch guy. Let's be honest. At this
very
point,
successful
Rafael,
agency.
Yeah,
they have three guys that I think will be in the first round. The thing about Nick Smith, which is very interesting, is that coming into the season, a lot of scouts felt like he was the best player in college basketball. They thought he was a surefire top five, at least top 10 pick. He missed a lot of time over the season with what they labeled as right knee management. And he would play a few games, miss games, play games, miss games, play games, miss games. So he never really had a rhythm, which I think really impacted like his role. Then Arkansas team didn't have spacing. So his numbers don't necessarily reflect the talent. I don't know if defensively he's able to come in and contribute and help, because he is thin. I think his offense is way ahead of his defense. He's a guy that like his bread and butter was like his floater, which ironically he was not efficient shooting the floater in college, but I think that was more so of a spacing issue. But he was one of the better shooters, this is a small sample size, off the catch. And he knocked down open jumpers off the catch. And I think that he is someone that he's probably going to fall to the late lottery range at best, and maybe even fall outside of the lottery. But whatever team gets him, if he's healthy, then you could end up getting a steal, because, again, he was, by most accounts, the number one college player in the country coming into the season, at least the number one prospect by a lot of different scouts.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, just so you know, you can feel free to disagree with any of this analysis that I offer out, because none of it's mine. I've not seen any of these players. So you're not going to offend me in the slightest.
Nick Smith Jr. could have just as easily been the composite player on a video game that just gets filled in because they didn't have the rights before Andy saw this mock draft.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to get a 185-pound guard that's ready to contribute right away on the defensive end at 6'5".
One more
skinny. Wow.
One more name that I've seen come up for the Lakers a couple times in drafts, which is a combo guard out of Michigan, Kobe Bufkin, which in a lot of ways I feel like it's unfair to this kid to be named Kobe, selected by the Lakers. Like that feels brutal. Yeah. But it seems like he's got a lot of versatility, what I'm seeing. He's got an outside shot. I've seen some defensive praise for him. What have you seen from him? And again, another Michigan guy, so you know Rob Pelinka's been watching him.
Yeah. He has an interesting story. He's one of the younger sophomores. There are actually freshmen that are older than him. So I think his teammate Jet Howard is older than him. So he wasn't on radars last year because he was a younger freshman. I think he only averaged like 3 points per game. So he's gone from 3 points per game as a freshman to someone that I think could also fall in the back end of the lottery. And what's interesting about Bufkin is when I do like my scouting reports, I break it down from strengths to areas for improvement. He is someone that's really solid all the way around. I don't want to go as far as saying that he's the most complete player in the draft, but he doesn't have like a glaring weakness. So for example, Derek Lively, you can say his glaring weakness is he averaged 3 points per game. He needs to get stronger. You can say Jet Howard, he only averaged 3 rebounds per game, despite the fact that he's 6'8", 215. and defenses is an issue. With Buff,
that's only three more than Andy average.
Yeah, three more than me.
He's 5'8".
Yeah, a little bit more than me. So, but he did have some ankle injuries that may have impacted lateral movement and how much he wanted to go down there and grab rebounds. But Bufkin, he shoots the ball at a respectable rate. According to my numbers, he was the most efficient finisher at the rim in his draft class. Shot 71% at the rim. So he's a good finisher in college. I know you guys say you don't watch college basketball, but there's no spacing in college basketball. It's like playing in a phone booth in a sense. And despite being slim, he's a great finisher. Like I said, he defends. He doesn't have like the glaring weaknesses that a lot of different prospects have. So I'd say between him, Cason Wallace, and obviously like Vic, I think those are three of the more well-rounded and complete players in this draft.
So when you look at a guy like Bufkin, for example, who hopefully at the very least could slot in as the second most successful Kobe in team history behind Bryant and ahead of Carl, for a team that will always be driven by superstars, is he the kind of guy that, like, you know, when you talk about ceiling versus floor, who has a pretty good chance of developing into like a really solid rotation player, valuable player on a good team? Like, that is that kind of player is specifically valuable to the Lakers, who will almost always find their stars somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy, that's what I was thinking. Like, yeah, if he ends up being really good, then it's great. Perfect. You package him and whatever for the next disgruntled max player that wants to come
out. Rafael's already
trading Kobe Buffett.
Wow.
I was even thinking, like, they could actually keep him and he could become a useful player on a good team. But yeah, you're right. Those types of guys don't seem to last very long in L.A.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they turn into all-stars on their second or third team. But
yeah. All right, so – I want to ask you one more question about potential players who, you know, might fall into the Lakers' lap as this night goes on, and teams and players kind of jump up the board in the last couple weeks before the draft starts. Also want to get your opinion, Rafael, on what teams value now in the draft and what they're looking for specifically as it goes on, you know, outside the lottery into the second round. So more with Rafael Barlow, host of the NBA Big Board podcast. That's coming up next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by FanDuel, and make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA finals, because right now new customers can get a no sweat first bet up to $2,500. That is $2,500 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and you can bet on everything, from the money line to the top point scores, or get a little saucy with an exclusive bet like the 2x3, 2 3-pointers scored in the first 3 minutes. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets and a chance with a bigger payout with the same game parlay. It's safe, secure, really easy to use. Get paid instantly. There is no better place to bet all the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment count more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
All right, one more segment with the host of Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, Rafael Barlow. We've run through a few names, and it's okay if you repeat a couple, but I'm really interested as players move up, guys like Lively and other, you know, the French kid whose name I am forgetting, but he plays with Wemby.
Bilal Coulibaly.
Yes, he seems to be rocketing up draft boards really quickly. That obviously means that there are always, you know, two or three dudes who, you know, are left sitting in the green room, you know, waiting to get drafted. Who are a couple guys that you think might end up slipping that were, you know, considered, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, or whatever it might be, whether now or a couple weeks ago, that the Lakers, should, like, run to the podium to take if they're still sitting around?
Yeah, maybe Bryce Sensabaugh, who I talked about. Mm-hmm. I think Jet Howard is a candidate. So those are names that I've already mentioned. A name that I'm seeing, based off of like ESPN's mock, not saying like that's the end all be all, but they have Cason Wallace fall into like 15. And I think Cason can easily go in the top 10. If he ends up falling in that range, I mean, that would be still, he's the best defender as far as wing defender in this class. I don't know if he falls that far, but, you know, stranger things have happened. Mm-hmm. Sometimes all it takes is a trade, a couple trades and then somebody ends up sliding. Another name that could fall, which it's not because of the last 3 weeks, but Dariq Whitehead. Dariq was a projected top 10 pick coming into the season, broke his foot or just had a foot injury in the preseason last year, didn't necessarily live up to all the hype. And similar to Lively had had an injury before the season also at Duke. But Whitehead is a guy that everybody loved coming into this season. He played at Montverde, which is like the high school that has produced so many really good NBA players, from Ben Simmons. Well, Ben Simmons before Ben Simmons became what he is today. But Montverde has a history of producing talent from like Cade Cunningham. And he was highly touted as like this shot maker, wing playmaker. And he was reduced to like a role as like a spot-up shooter this year at Duke, but he shot over 40% from three. And he's just had like his second foot surgery, so that could be a major reason why he falls. So, for example, if the Lakers feel like, oh, that 17 is too high to take him, but they trade back 5 to 10 spots, he could be available. Hmm. And like I said, what I like about him is that he shot the ball well in this role that he wasn't expected to play. He was expected to have a lot of on-ball reps and turn into a spot-up shooter that made shots.
So, it's interesting when you say that, because this is, and I guess it gets to a little bit of what I wanted to ask, but like, what do successful teams, you talk about, guys who get to college and they're, maybe expected to do one thing and they're used in a different way. And so that impacts their stats. It impacts, how they perform at the collegiate level. We all know that certain programs can be kind of restrictive in terms of allowing certain players, different players, to show the full range of their talents. What do the best NBA teams do in terms of understanding the way that context impacts this stuff? Is it through the workouts? Is it through scrimmages? How do the teams that are really good at this cut
like through, like the Lakers
cut through some of that contextual noise to pick guys who can fit what they need to do at the NBA level versus being successful or maybe less successful than expected at the collegiate level?
Oh man, I'm trying to think of the best short answer, and I would say maybe trust in their gut and not drafting what the consensus says draft. And I've heard someone say that, like, for example, if John Doe is projected to go 10, and if he goes 10 and he fails, then everybody would have made that mistake. But if he was projected to go 10 and you take him at 3 and he fails, then you lose your job. So with that being said, one of the things I think that the Lakers, other than Lonzo Ball, I felt like they kind of went with the consensus there or whatever. But the Lakers haven't really, they've trusted their gut and they've trusted their scouting. And the best example recently is just Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves is a guy, even though they didn't draft him, but they did their homework. They saw that he was a good shooter at Wichita State early in his career, his freshman year. He did not shoot the ball like efficiently from three at Oklahoma. But to me, I'm assuming they went back, did their research. So, all right, at Wichita State, he was a spot up shooter. And then he had a more difficult role as like a shot creator at Oklahoma that impacted his percentages. And they work out an agreement. He comes and now he's a shooter. Like, the knock on Austin Reeves was he could not shoot. And I'm a big Austin Reeves guy because, what was it, 3 years ago when I started my podcast, he was the only player that would come on my podcast and do an interview with me. So I'm definitely rooting for Austin long term. But to me, that's just an example of the Lakers really doing their homework and going over a full body of work, as opposed to just maybe looking at the numbers and not putting context into why a guy's shooting percentage from three may have been lower than someone that is being labeled as a shooter.
Last question I have for you, Rafael, and it got me thinking a little bit just in terms of the Lakers, their success picking in the second round, or a guy like Austin Reeves, undrafted. When you mentioned Kobe Bufkin and being young, mm-hmm. When the Lakers took Max Christie, he was a young freshman. Like, he wasn't just a one and done. He was a young one and done. And he showed some flashes of potential this year. What What was your impression of Max Christie, I guess, heading into this year's draft? And what do you see as his potential in the NBA? And I ask because I think the Lakers are at least potentially earmarking a role for him next season when he still would be a pretty young player.
Yeah, they went on upside, which is something I probably wouldn't have guessed the Lakers would do, is take somebody that young and just bet on the upside down the line. I would have assumed that they would have taken somebody that they felt like was ready to come in and contribute right away. But from what I heard last year, and I wasn't as high on Max Christie as others, but I know last year during the pre-draft process, I talked to a friend of mine that worked for a team, and he was in his workouts, and he said Max Christie had the best workout out of all the players they brought in. Mm-hmm. And he said if he were in charge of his team's draft, he would have taken him in the top 20. Even though wow. The numbers at Michigan State didn't necessarily suggest that he was a top 20 pick. So I'm not too surprised by his success and why the Lakers are high on him, because from everything that I heard last summer, he was really good, but also heard that other teams may have been worried about selecting him so high because they thought, okay, maybe he's a workout wonder. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like the Lakers understood, okay, he was a young freshman. College basketball is getting older. I mean, there's a guy playing for Memphis that's like 26 years old. So college basketball is getting younger. And I do think that you have to factor in that, you know, an 18-year-old freshman may not have the best numbers, like Kobe Bufkin, for example, 3 points per game last year. He plays with his normal age, and he's a sophomore, has a year of experience over the other freshmen in his class, but he was really productive. So with all that being said, I know that was a long answer. If Max Christie stays in school as a sophomore, I'm thinking he's probably a lottery pick, and he's not in the Lakers' range last year.
That's exactly what they would want to hear from that pick, and that's sort of how they described it. I remember when Rob Pelinka described that pick, they said, you know, if he's in college for 2 years, we can't get him next year.
Yeah, there's another guy I want to add, but I think...
Oh, sure.
G.G. Jackson, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he has a workout coming out with the Lakers pretty soon. He is someone that I'm high on. I know a lot of people are just kind of iffy on him, but he started off college basketball at 17 years old.
Oh, wow.
He's only 18 now. He's only eligible for this draft because he was born 14 days before, like, the deadline. If he was born 2 weeks later, he wouldn't even be old enough to be in this draft. He averaged 15 points per game, 6 rebounds at South Carolina, played in the SEC.
Big kid, 6'9", 215.
Can handle the ball as a shot creator. The efficiency numbers aren't there. A lot of people may be concerned about his maturity because he went on like Instagram Live after a game and kind of complained. Not necessarily, well, I guess you can say he complained, but he was just answering questions and saying like the team doesn't look for him in late shot clock or late game situations. So that kind of led to people questioning his maturity. But he was the number one player in his high school class before he reclassified. So I think that if, let's say, the Lakers take him at 17 or they trade back and get him at 20, you're getting the number one or number two pick in the 2024 draft. And I think 2024 class is weak. I think it's really weak. And, you know, some people say that he made a mistake by classifying up because he was really young. I mean, 17 years old. But if the team, like, let's say it is the Lakers, if they say, well, you know what, he's not able to come in and contribute right away. But if we send him to South Bay for a year and use that season or next season as a developmental year, then maybe, you know, we have somebody that could really be something down the line. So he's a guy that I think that, similar to like the whole Max Christie situation, that the Lakers should definitely consider.
And that, by the way, and so you're talking about a guy who could be available at 17, or even perhaps if the Lakers had their eye on him, wanted to trade back a little bit, might still be available in the 20s.
Yeah, I think he has a wide draft range. I mean, if he goes late lottery because the team is thinking the same thing, like, you know, we won't be able to get him in this range next year if he stays. Some team may look at it like that, and some teams may say, hey, he's 18 years old. I mean, like, from the Lakers' perspective, an 18-year-old in Los Angeles with millions of dollars, that's a scary situation for me.
But the good thing about that, and we'll wrap it here, is the Lakers, who have done a really great job with their G League team, have the benefit of having that organization run out of the same facility that the big club practices in. So you know, they are around their G League prospects all the time. They are able to bring them back and forth to be around LeBron, to be around Anthony Davis, around Darvin Ham, around all of these veteran players and coaches. So that is a benefit to them when you do draft players who are younger. Yeah. The podcast is the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. It's where you go on the network to get all the stuff that you're going to need between now and the draft. And then after the draft, when you're starting to look to the next year's draft, when we're giving picks back to New Orleans, I believe. But still, listen to the podcast anyway. He also go subscribe to the NBA Big Board newsletter, and you will be as prepared as you can be for June 22nd. Rafael Barlow, thanks so much for coming on, man. This is incredibly informative for us, and I know our listeners as well. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. If you want to talk about second round picks or guys that are can potentially go undrafted, two-way guys for the Lakers, which you guys had success with undrafted players, let me know. I'll come back on. I have a couple guys in mind that I think
could be a good fit. All right, but be careful what you wish for, because we will do that. So that sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.